once in a while, we check in on Donald Trump Jr.'s podcast, Triggered. Now, it's called Triggered because MAGA has this obsession with feeling like they're triggering the libs, right? Own the libs. And it is strange to so greatly identify your movement with the behavior of making upset a different movement. Couldn't you have more to identify with? But okay, Triggered is his podcast. Very exciting stuff. And I always think it's notable that he seems rather disheveled, distraught, and in distress whenever we see him in this podcast. Deranged, dangerous, I don't know, add as many words as you want. And here he's losing his mind over a story that we've seen a lot of right-wing media obsessing over and very angry about, and it relates to, you'll see, but furries is what they're referred to as. And this is funny for what he says, and also because I want to use this as a jumping off point for a really important conversation, if you can even imagine. And then we'll look at some other clips as well. But first, here is Donald Trump Jr., very fixated, and he spent a bunch of the show talking about this. I'll just show 33 seconds, fixated on furries.
The furry is like the trans community. They're going to be totally protected. They can bark at people. They can distract it because they think they're dogs and cats. We have to accommodate their insanity. Now, if someone says something or pushes back, I guarantee you, the normal person that's trying to get an education, that's trying to learn in school, trying to be left alone from people who'd otherwise be certifiably insane if it wasn't for 2024, that person's the one that's going to get in trouble, not the idiot.
Yeah, so someone is certifiably insane, as he said. I think it just might be the guy on screen who is a grown adult obsessing over students who dress as animals. Okay, that's the fixation in some school somewhere is the story you're talking about. Really, really, Don. We have food insecurity in schools, but the story out of a school he wants to talk about relates to children dressing as animals. Oh, goodness. Now, if you're not familiar, that's what furry refers to. People who, as a hobby, I guess, dress up as animals. And you don't have to understand the appeal of such activity to get that other people have other hobbies. I don't go to Comic-Con, for example, but I am sure it's a blast to go and dress up as a comic book character. And I will warn Don, if he's this been out of shape about animals and animal costumes, then I will warn him there's a time, if I'm not mistaken, shortly before November, where people dress as all sorts of things and it's gonna blow his mind. He's really gonna hate it. And then they come to your door and they knock on it and they say, trick or treat. but I do refuse, I will say explicitly, to engage on the substance, if you want to call it that, of what he's talking about. I saw it was referring to Utah, so I think he's talking about a story that got a lot of coverage in right-wing media, and as so often happens, it seems like they were sort of bending the facts a little bit to get people all riled up, and there's always an epidemic of craziness, and then you look into it, and it's being blown way out of proportion. But at best, if there is some story just taking from his context clues of someone barking at a student and students being upset about it, that's something that can be dealt with at that school. We don't need to have a national conversation about that, okay? There are millions and millions of people. Someone somewhere is going to be barking at someone, okay? That's just how it goes. Not cause for a big national political conversation. And that gets us to the really important part of this, which is that why do we see so often these stories obsessed over, especially in right-wing media? You don't see the same phenomenon in mainstream liberal media. When you go on right-wing media, though, so often these very obscure, very niche, particular little example, they get obsessed over. Like, here's an example. This story turned out to be completely false, but we've heard time and time again from the likes of Don Jr. about litter boxes in bathrooms, that kids are identifying as animals, and so then they're going to the restroom in litter boxes in bathrooms. Completely false. Wasn't true. But it got talked about, and sometimes it's still brought up in right-wing media. Or this obsession with furries or drag queens, the whole rave about that. Oh my gosh, they're gonna climb through your window and turn your kid gay or something. and the reason why they spend so much time and effort finding these stories, then signal boosting them on social media, then making them seem like a really big issue, is because they have nothing else. They can't engage on policy. Because if the Republican movement right now just ran against Joe Biden on policy, they would get trounced. Whether it be because of the threat that Trump poses to democracy, one side respecting our democratic institutions and our democratic process, and one with both a record and intentions to show for an individual who wants to destroy our democratic process, or reproductive rights. You want to have a debate about the merits of that and the Republican record versus Democratic and where Americans stand, obviously siding in a major way with Democrats on that issue. Even the economy doing really well right now with still issues, but doing really well by the metrics we use to measure such a thing, outpacing our G7 counterparts, doubling the GDP growth of every other G7 country. Healthcare, you want to talk about Biden lowering prescription drug costs, Trump promising to do that, but not getting it done, Trump never bringing forward a healthcare plan, and we could go on and on. Trump wanting to terminate the ACA, something that would be very unpopular. If they had conversations just about the actual big issues, the actual things that impact people's lives, and didn't focus on things like furries or drag queens. And I have to say, I've never heard Joe Biden speak the word furry in my entire life. So clearly not a part of his policy platform. Then they would lose so badly. And so my request to Americans at large is please keep your eye on the ball. Right now, democracy's on the line. Women's rights are on the line. Not to mention numerous policy issues, whether it be gun violence, whether it be, like I said, healthcare, whether it be caring for our veterans or investing in the energy of the future, whether it be protecting workers' rights and allowing them to organize properly to advocate on their own behalf. These issues matter so much and impact so many people's lives. And Biden has the better policy position on all of them compared to Donald Trump. And that's why Don Jr. has to spend time talking about some school in Utah where someone barked. And I'm serious. Notice it. How often are these sorts of topics obsessed over in right-wing media? It's all too often. And the consequential issues, they just cannot bring forward a good policy agenda on. Even the border, that's the one sort of policy issue that they seem to politically benefit on. But if you look at the facts, if people could actually look at the facts, they see that right now MAGA Republicans are the ones blocking progress on that by blocking this bipartisan border deal that's endorsed by the Border Patrol Union, and Joe Biden's advocating for it. So a whole lot of rhetoric and fear-mongering, not actual policy proposals. Here's more from Don Jr.
You'll never know. If it was someone who even remotely conservative, I'm sure they would have thrown him off. You know, the Democrats, they're evil and they're smart. They'll show up there in a MAGA hat and pretend they're conservative and unbiased. And then they'll go in there and they'll do the bidding of the fascists, the Democrat Party.
Yeah. Instead of going in and acting like you're unbiased, they would go in and wear a MAGA hat, which would also be perceived as biased. And they're just lazily trying to deteriorate the belief in this criminal trial involving his father. And no matter which lies they tell or which conspiracy theories about liberals and MAGA hats they push, this case will go on and justice hopefully will prevail. Here's another moment.
And let's get into some of those top headlines, because we got some crazy times. We've been sold out on Ukraine, rhinos, Democrats, Capitol Hill, the swamp creatures, the billionaire class donors. They are pushing Joe Biden's wish list and sending billions to Ukraine. The bill is a disaster.
The bill is a disaster. Now, I have said this a few times now, but I really cannot get my head around what the heck this opposition to helping Ukraine is within MAGA. Where does it derive itself from? But the best answer is there's an ideological alignment between the authoritarianism of Putin and some of his other ideological stances and the current MAGA movement. That's frightening, and their hope that Trump could become more of a Putin-like figure or just being knee-jerk opposed to anything that Joe Biden is very clearly for. But we're seeing Marjorie Taylor Greene push this revolt against Mike Johnson over a few different things, but Ukraine aid is a huge part of it. And she's so obsessively, a Democratic congressman described it as demented in the way that Marjorie Taylor Greene is opposed to and has this visceral hatred for Ukraine. And there Don Jr. is bolstering that message. It is very difficult to understand when there seems to be separate from, even though we should care about this, but MAGA obviously doesn't, separate from the sovereignty of Ukraine and the Ukrainian people and the aid going to defend and support those, also just selfishly from the United States' perspective, making sure Russia cannot prevail here is absolutely in our interest as well. But all of that goes by the wayside, and now there's this huge opposition within MAGA to a dollar going to the effort to support Ukraine's defense of themselves. Then Bannon brought on Donald Trump Jr.
Jury could take forever. You could see last night as we curated MSNBC and CNN, the gleam in their eye, understanding Biden hurts himself every day. He's on the campaign trail. President Trump drives the message, drives the energy, drives his numbers every day he is. Their plan right now, brother, I think, is to drag this thing out past Memorial Day. The judge...
Okay, so Trump has been the one trying to delay his cases over and over and over. So don't talk to me about dragging it out. But also, I just wanted to play that Steve Bannon part because sometimes these talking points are established, then never updated for new information. And so they have this idea that Biden can't campaign or that that hurts him, even though since he started actually campaigning, his numbers have gotten a lot better. And we talked about how his State of the Union address had a really positive impact on people's perception of his policy record and policy vision for the future. So he's absolutely incorrect on that. Biden's been all over the place lately. It seems to be helping his approval rating and poll numbers. And I think as people see Trump more and he's more in their face, it's going to hurt Trump's approval ratings and his prospects in this election. I have some interesting video to play for you of a CNN focus group where a Trump supporter is in a focus group with other more liberal voters, and the Trump supporter loses it, gets very upset. But I do want to address what he says in this moment that you're about to see. And there is an unfortunate element of our current political moment that is depicted in this.
Well, 2024 shapes up to be a bitter rematch. Longtime Republican pollster Frank Luntz is sharing some never-before-seen video from his focus groups, sharing it with OutFront. Take a look.
Top condescending was Obama. But I couldn't stand to watch that guy. He just looked down on top of everybody. Trump will get down in the dirt and work with you. So Obama would never have done that.
You want respect, but you have a president who takes on women, minorities, everything but white
and
males.
He won the election. And he won.
He didn't get
and you guys can't
vote.
Handle that.
Okay, so first of all, there's so much to be said there, and I'll get to a clip that's pretty incredible in a moment, but first, I really am sick of this argument of Trump won the election, so thus something about him must be just so incredible, and see, there's truth to what's being said within MAGA, blah, 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 because he won the election. Yeah, he won in 2016, got trounced in the popular vote, but won the Electoral College, and then went on to lose for Republicans so many elections and then lost his own election in 2020. If your argument is we have to really derive meaning from and really maybe change our views because Trump won and that's such a huge momentous thing that we should consider. Yeah, we considered it and then we adjusted and now the American people kicked him out. Okay, so now it's your turn. I want MAGA to do a little bit of introspection and figure out why it is that Biden got 81 million votes and absolutely obliterated Trump in the popular vote, especially. I want you to think about why do so many Americans want that over what they had under Donald Trump when they actually saw the governance of Donald Trump. But it's always, even in these sort of mainstream media pieces, there's always this focus on how can we learn from the MAGA voter? What are we missing there? But never the same thing in right-wing media. And I'm for trying to understand the other side. That's why I've gone to so many rallies. And I absolutely think that's the case. It's important to do that, but it never goes in the opposite direction. So that talking point aside, he also says that Obama always looked down on people, whereas Trump would get down in the dirt with you. I think even Trump would admit that he would not get down in the dirt with anybody, okay? Him, Donald Trump and dirt are like peanut butter and bleach. I don't know. They don't go together at all. And instead, it is so often Democratic policies that represent the working man and working woman far more accurately, not perfect, but far better than Donald Trump's policies. Sir, CNN focus group Trump supporter, sir, Trump's only major policy achievement when he was president was cutting taxes disproportionately benefiting those at the top of the economic ladder. Trump has spent his whole life from having a silver spoon in his mouth at birth all the way until now. He's been in billionaire and millionaire circles. He's been in liberal New York and hanging around a bunch of people that absolutely are far more likely to look down on a lot of folks compared to Joe Biden, for example, who came from a much more modest beginning, and Obama absolutely the same. But in this guy's mind, somehow Trump is the guy who gets the angst and gets the experience of the working class person, and Obama's the one who's super detached from that. And also, isn't Biden the person we're supposed to be discussing? Obama's gone. He said that liberals can't handle the fact that Trump won, which, true, I can't handle it. Accuse me of that, sure. It's like whenever people say you seem obsessed with Trump. People who want to end democracy, I get really obsessed with them, and I want to make sure that they lose. And I can't handle the fact that a bunch of people wanted Trump to be our president and still want Trump to be our president after he tried to do all the things he tried to do, most notably trying to block the peaceful transfer of power, which would have ended our democratic process potentially for good. Yes, I can't handle that, and I'm obsessed with it, 100%. Guilty as charged. But it here shows you the power, to me, of the sort of cult of personality, and what's necessary for that is the media echo chamber that people are in. Because what should politics be about? Well, mostly about policy, right? Aren't we choosing elected leaders who will get in there and then govern and implement policies? And if we're actually trying to put an emphasis on the policy record of the individuals we're discussing, then undeniably, I don't have to go through it again because I do it so often on the show, but the Biden record and also Obama compared to Trump, but because Biden is most relevant right now to this conversation, the Biden policy record is one that uplifts working class Americans and isn't exemplifying the looking down upon people. Whereas Trump's is absolutely that, absolutely. And it's crazy that that gets distracted from. You know, we talked about in a Don Jr. segment, the way that right-wing media distracts from the super consequential policy issues by obsessing over things like furries or the latest culture war issue of the day. And that's a part of this right-wing media echo chamber, and that shows their ability to keep people's focus on things that aren't the most consequential in their lives. It's not their healthcare costs. It's not the well-being of their children at school. It's not the food insecurity that's being experienced, etc. Instead, their focus can be on sort of vibes-based things and being viscerally upset about stuff. And that individual there has just been convinced by right-wing media that Obama looks down on him, whereas Trump would get down the dirt with him. And it is ridiculous, but it is something we have to figure out how to get around. How do we inform people through this huge, strong shield of right-wing media that convinces them of all sorts of bonkers things? Now, speaking of Trump's ability to relate with or care for people versus Biden. Let me show you a video of Joe Biden being told by a voter that his ability to cap insulin costs for Medicare recipients has been huge in this voter's life. And look at how Biden interacts with this voter. Tell me if you think Trump would be able to do the same.
What's your name?
Bob. Hey, I'd like to thank you for lowering the cost of my insulin. It makes a big difference in my life.
God love you. It does.
It does. Truly does.
From 2025?
Yes.
No senior will ever have to pay more than $2,000 for every single drug they have.
That is, you don't know how I'm paying almost $5,000 a year and I'm on Medicare.
It's going to go down to a maximum of $2,000.
That's incredible.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed.
We love you, Mr. President.
I love you.
Yeah, so a pretty incredible moment. And Biden is trying to go further with these decreases in prescription drug costs. The only impediment is Republicans right now, and sometimes really conservative Democrats, but mostly Republicans. And so back to the original guy, the Trump supporter, please, I beg you, if you could ever see this, I beg you to think about this, that maybe you're in a right-wing media bubble that feeds you information to make you feel the way that you feel. But if you actually took a little bit more of an objective look at the policy record, again, that we've compared so many times of Biden versus Trump, you'd realize there is one side that's clearly looking out for your interest much more. And it's not the guy who you believe would get down in the dirt with you, who is notoriously vain and pretentious. Marjorie Taylor Greene appeared on InfoWars with Alex Jones, which you know is going to be a bad combination. And I have a really interesting clip to play for you here where she says something that indicates she gets that things aren't looking as good for Trump as once was claimed by the likes of herself or MAGA at large. And what I mean is, leading up to this point in time, there was this overly confident tone among Trump world that he is gonna beat Biden so easily and he's just waiting out the clock and that's why we'll just delay these trials and then he's gonna win, he'll be fine, everything will be great, and then he'll get to work on his authoritarian project. And now you're seeing a little bit of a freak out going on, and Marjorie Taylor Greene says something in this moment that is not what Donald Trump wants to hear if he's listening to this edition of InfoWars. And so I'll play it for you, and then I have more to look at as well.
Here's the biggest problem, Alex. Most of my Republican colleagues, everybody in Washington, D.C., all of the political consulting class, they're angry at me. They're saying, oh, we need to wait till after Trump wins the election. Oh, we're going to fix all this stuff next Congress. Alex, I'm not so sure that Trump is going to be able to win the election. This is April. I know the polling looks good, but November's a long ways away. And we already went through a stolen election that in many of these states never changed their election laws. There's also this. They are trying to lock President Trump up. They want to put him in jail for the rest of his life. And they mean it. They are not backing down. So there's no guarantee we're going to win this election.
Yeah, so obviously because she's Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's going to frame this as, oh, because they're gonna steal it or because they're gonna lock him up unfairly. And we have gone through for the entire time that I've had this show why the stolen election claims are absolutely ridiculous. And then we've been spending lots of time since Trump was indicted explaining why the claims of this being unfair prosecution are baseless. But that is her way of saying she just thinks politically things are getting much tougher. And that's her way of saying that maybe this isn't as in the bag as they were previously acting like. And she would never admit this, but Trump should be terrified of the fact that the economy is doing much better, that Joe Biden has overseen this pretty impressive economic recovery after the shambles of a situation that was left for him by Donald Trump. They won't admit this, but people will start to notice the fact that crime has plummeted under Joe Biden. People are starting to feel the investments in their communities through the infrastructure law and these other huge legislative victories that Biden has overseen. People will start to notice the fact that their student loans are being forgiven, etc. And those factors, as I've been saying for a real long time, and a lot of people have been pointing this out, are sort of something that gets felt on a delay, where it happens, a policy is implemented, or an economic metric is shown to be taking place, but it takes a second for people to actually feel that. And obviously, just by seeing the fact that unemployment's low, or seeing the fact that wages are increasing, or whatever it might be, that's not going to impact you until that's felt in your life. And so now that those ripples are actually impacting people where it matters, I do think that it's contributing to why Biden is seeing a bump in the polls that we'll get to in a second. And also, I've also been really hopeful about the reality that as Biden actually goes full in on campaigning, and he's not just quietly governing, but actually out there campaigning, people will be hearing more about his policy record, hearing his critiques of Donald Trump, to say the least. And the same for Trump, where they'll be hearing more from him as people actually start to engage and realize this election's coming up. And those factors only serve to benefit Joe Biden, where as people engage more, they're reminded of the deranged mess that Donald Trump is, and no longer is he this, which I know avid political viewers won't get this, but a lot of people, he's become sort of an abstract thought. And sort of before the pandemic, things were maybe going all right. And then there's this fairy tale of Trump that's very much detached from his actual record, and people are associating more with that. But as Trump reminds them of the real Trump, then he will be harmed politically. And as Joe Biden reminds people, now that he's actually out there on the campaign trail, of what the governance has actually been that he's overseen and what he could do in a second term, especially with the Democratic majority in the House and Senate, I think that's going to be very beneficial politically. And so I say all that, and I'll play another clip here from a different interview of Marjorie Green in a second, but I say that because it's hopeful, real, and also definitely what Marjorie Taylor Greene is picking up on. She's realizing one by one, the issues they were hoping on running on are falling apart. The economy, it's getting harder for them to run on that, given the successful recovery Biden has overseen. They try to blame him for things that the pandemic caused, but as he solves those issues, and obviously not just Biden, but everyone doing the hard work to make that happen, it's not as effective to attack him on that. Crime, as we've been talking about, because it's plummeting, that's getting harder to attack Biden on, even though they tried their very best, like I said, to blame him for the surge in crime that started under Donald Trump because of the pandemic and Trump's mishandling of it. And then even the border, while that still is politically benefiting them for some reason, the facts are showing that even that isn't something they should be justified in attacking Biden over, given that the Marjorie Taylor Greens of Congress are the ones obstructing this bipartisan border deal that's endorsed by the Border Patrol Union. And so as these different issues fall apart, they're getting more desperate. They're seeing the damage that a potential conviction could lead to politically, and she's getting ready to warn the MAGA audience, listen, this might not be as good as you think it's gonna be, and thus we gotta do the crazy MAGA stuff now while we still have the power, at least in the House of Representatives. Here is more from Marjorie Taylor Greene.
This is different. They're angry on a whole nother level, and here's what really worries me. They're done with the Republican Party. They are absolutely done with Republican leadership like Mike Johnson, who totally sold us out to the Democrats, joined the Uniparty faster than anyone we've ever seen in history, and literally made a night and day change in a matter of months. Betrayed everyone, betrayed the entire Republican Party, betrayed Republican voters, betrayed the Republican conference. And voters are so angry this time, but I'm really worried. I am really worried. They're so angry, they're not going to give us the majority back in 2025.
So not only is she dropping the bomb on Trump of you're not necessarily going to win this thing, and that the future for Trump might be prison, not the presidency, but she's also saying, and almost giving permission to MAGA voters, of maybe you're so upset with Mike Johnson that you're not going to go out and vote for Republicans. And that is an absolutely beautiful thing for her to be saying. And again, even though she's just providing what you would call prediction there, or thinking it's concerning that maybe voters will be so upset with Mike Johnson and Republican leadership that they'll stay home, but it sounds a little bit like, and that would be justified. And we saw what the effect, or we speculate that the effect of MAGA voters being not motivated after the 2020 election to vote for the Senate race in Georgia because they just thought that the Trump election was stolen and so they didn't think it was worth it to go out and vote for the Republican Senate candidates in Georgia, that could have contributed to those two Democratic victories that were surprising and incredible. And a similar thing could be happening here, where this anger within the party could suppress MAGA vote and hurt the Republican Party, which would be absolutely beautiful. Now, on the polling, here is something Fox News showed, a five-way ballot according to NBC News. Biden at 39%, Trump at 37%, Kennedy at 13%, Stein at 3%, West at 2%. And I don't want to get into a whole rant, but I do just want to say the three there, 13, 3, and 2, if they love their country and love their democracy, they should be dropping out and endorsing Joe Biden. But then I'll jump over here to The Hill. President Biden is narrowly leading former President Trump in a new national poll of voters, with his lead growing slightly when narrowing in on those who said they definitely plan to vote in November. A Marist PBS NewsHour poll published Monday found Biden leading Trump 51% to 48% among registered voters, which is an uptick from the last one at 50 to 48%. But then I've been referring to, but haven't given you a visual representation of this, I've been referring to the bump of Biden that he's experienced sort of since the State of the Union and now that his campaign's actually fully underway. And I keep wording it that way because if you are keeping up with the way that Biden's been conducting himself, there's a big difference between quietly govern Biden and campaign brag about successes Biden and lay out plan for the future Biden. And right now we've seen the shift finally and it's making a difference. Look at this. If you see here a low point around February 2nd, then since February 2nd, we've just seen a huge surge for Biden. And now essentially in the average of polls, this is 670 polls being combined here and getting the average, you have essentially a neck and neck race now where Biden was trailing significantly and now he's shooting up. Now, what's the takeaway? Woohoo, pop the champagne? No, obviously not. And especially now that we have our nominees, there's not a lot other than just checking in on how things are going. There's not a lot that we can gain in terms of insight from the polls, meaning our activity shouldn't be changed by whatever the polls do. If all of a sudden Biden's trailing, we have the same goal. If Biden's leading Trump by a gazillion points, same goal. Same amount of work needs to go in to make sure that Donald Trump is defeated. And so I think obsessing over the horse race too much can get counterproductive and people can take the wrong lessons from it. Oh, all hope is lost, or oh, we're doing so great, we can sort of kick back and relax. And neither of those are the correct answer. No matter what the polls look like right before the election, we're going to want to have done everything we can to protect our democracy and protect the rights of people and enable further policy successes. And so the polls shouldn't impact that. But I will say, I am going to be tooting my own horn if the people who were so pessimistic about this election end up being wrong. I'm just going to be honest, okay? And then they can toot their horns at me if it goes the other way. I am putting that line in the sand that if we end up prevailing politically, there have been some people irritating me who have been since early on really, really pessimistic and saying that there's zero chance Biden could possibly win against Donald Trump. And if that doesn't end up being the case, I will be a little petty, okay? I'm just warning you all. It's been said. Well, brace yourself. I'm going to play a video for you that will bring back some bad memories and is now recirculating on this day for a very particular reason. And it's of Donald Trump while he was president. 4 years ago today, and this is very relevant given that right now we're watching an attempt by Republicans to convince Americans that 4 years ago was a very wonderful time. And that's why we want to go back to 4 years ago before Joe Biden. And so let's do that. They've been asking us, were you better off 4 years ago? Let's check in on what was going on 4 years ago today.
So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said That hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, you can, which you can do, either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right, and then I see the disinfectant, where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs, and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful. Steve, please.
And I want to bring in now Josiah from Pondering Politics. I would say it's great to be with you, which it is, but I'm not feeling great at this moment after reflecting on that clip. There's so much to be said, and so I don't even know where to start, and I'll kick it over to you then and let you start on this one, Josiah.
So I have to start now.
You can
start. I mean, listen, that is... So Chris Hayes with MSNBC has been doing this thing. I don't know if it's every night, Luke, but I know it's multiple times a week, where he is basically taking up the Trump challenge of, were you better off 4 years ago than you are now? And this, to me, is almost the perfect encapsulation of this moment. When you consider... You know, I do think that Republicans struggle, like elected Republicans struggle with time, because this is what happened 4 years ago. We were in the midst of a once-in-a-century pandemic. Donald Trump was the nation's chief executive. So even though he didn't create COVID, I'm not blaming COVID on Trump. Trump had a constitutional and moral and civic obligation to step up as a leader and do everything in his power responsibly as the political and, you know, head of state and as the chief executive of the nation to manage this crisis. And what did he do instead? He did stuff like this. He did stuff like this where he suggests that the way to beat COVID isn't by following best medical practices when he's standing, 6 feet away from his medical advisors. It's actually maybe get creative with bleach. Have you thought about drinking bleach? Have you thought about injecting bleach? Have you thought about just like internalizing it? Because listen, you don't need to spray bleach, Luke. If you've got bleach in you all the time, that's Donald Trump's logic. That's what he said from behind the bully pulpit of the most powerful and important office in the world. And that is why I blame Donald Trump for so much of the pandemic, because he had the opportunity to do things to the best of his ability, and he clearly did not. And if that was the best of his ability, that man should be nowhere near the White House again, just want to say.
Yeah, and... Right now, we are experiencing this really dishonest attempt to sort of abstract the timeline and distort it in a way that benefits Trump, where people remember life as going from 2019 to sometime during the Biden administration when the worst of the pandemic was behind us. And the reason, as I've explained to my audience many times, that they're doing that is obviously, number one, to benefit Trump directly, so that you forget about his record and the fact that when a crisis came, something a president of the United States is obligated to handle, like you said, to the best of their ability. He failed. He failed us in that moment of crisis. And not only did we have insanely cartoonish moments like this, but also on the policy, he refused to take it as seriously soon enough as was being recommended by his medical professionals. And instead of just allowing them to stand up at that podium and him just bolstering their messages, he took it as an opportunity to spitball something that he was thinking about while he was going through his 3 a.m. toilet Twitter rage session, and something he read in one of those threads. And so he failed us, and he did contribute to the fact that we saw the economic collapse that we saw. He did contribute to the fact that the pandemic raged like it did. He did contribute to the fact that crime spiked in historic ways. So number one, the reason why Republicans are now trying to pretend like that just never happened, that just right, omit that from your memory about our timeline, is that's number one. Number two is because if you forget about the context of Biden's presidency, then you're judging it incorrectly and likely you'll be less impressed with the record. But if you understand that when Biden came into office, he was dealing with this economic collapse his predecessor had overseen, He had to come into office experiencing this public health nightmare. He had to come into office experiencing this huge spike in crime. And then you look at all the metrics and see how much better things have gotten. Now, our economy outpacing our counterparts. We're currently doubling the GDP growth of our G7 counterparts, which is pretty bonkers. The entire recovery has outpaced them. And obviously still real problems, but we've made so much progress. Crime now down to pre-pandemic levels or lower. Violent crime to near more than 50-year lows. And all of that happening while this historic policy record is being implemented, that is also something Republicans want you to forget about, is the pretext, what Biden had to inherit. Because if they get you to forget that, not only does Trump look less bad, but now they can blame inflation on Biden. Now they can blame a crime surge that he had to inherit on Biden. Now they can blame other economic problems that were obvious economic aftermaths of the pandemic and the mishandling. They can blame all of that on Biden, Josiah.
Yeah, so it actually, I would argue it goes one step beyond that too. So like you said, first they try to shave off an entire year of Trump's presidency. Trump was president in their mind from January 2017 until December 2019, December 31st. And then that last year, the Dems were in charge, I guess, in their mind, or Joe Biden was president. Like, they never actually say who was in charge, but they insinuate that whatever happened in 2020 was the fault of Democrats. The protests, a very small subset of which became riots in the aftermath of George Floyd's murder. They say that's Joe Biden's fault and the Democrats' fault, even though President Trump was in office at that time. The crime spike, even though President Trump was in office at that time, that's somehow on Biden, even though it was 2020. All the things, they do that. Then they try to get you to forget, like you said, what Biden inherited. But then they actually do one better. They pretend that then President Trump inherited nothing from former President Barack Obama. That's the other thing, which it's like this compound factor. They try to give Trump a year off. They pretend that he didn't leave President Biden a mess. And they also pretend that time began anew when Donald Trump was inaugurated, that President Obama didn't leave him an economy that was running relatively well, that it took 8 years to recover from the George W. Bush-triggered Great Recession. You see, this is the thing that it's so frustrating because, sadly, Luke, it's very effective, obviously not just with Republican voters, but unfortunately with a large subset of independent voters as well. And quite frankly, some Democrats, I've encountered some people who identify as Democrats who will give President Biden low marks on the economy because they too, I think, have bought into the framing that Trump was president for 3 years, that he inherited nothing good from Barack Obama, he did it all himself, and that he left Joe Biden something really, really good. And none of these things are true. And so that's part of the reason why, and I know you agree, because we've talked about this publicly and privately, facts don't speak for themselves, period. So the good facts, the unfavorable facts, they all have to be articulated by surrogates. They have to be conveyed. And the Republicans have invested decades and billions of dollars, if you count the Fox Propaganda Network and others, into shaping the framing in a way which always advantages them. So it's not enough to let the facts just speak for themselves. And it's not enough, in my opinion, Luke, to just accept the framing. I think we have to reframe it as well. We have to say, no. You don't get a year off when you're a president. You don't get to blame Democrats for everything, especially when they're out of power. And you don't get to adhere to double standards. And we, in the progressive space, in the liberal media, we are going to change that framing to the best of our ability as well, to something which is more fair and more accurate.
Yeah, and think about if you do that. If you do properly contextualize and then just in a pretty objective way, assess the last decade or so. As you pointed out, they really don't like to remember that Obama had to oversee the recovery after the Great Recession and then handed an economy that economic trends and projections indicated was going to head in a strong direction. Then it headed in a strong direction for a few years. And actually, as I was looking at economic expectations versus what happened, it actually slowed a little bit compared to expectations under Donald Trump. So nothing's remarkable about that. If you take over an economy that's expected to do well and does slightly less well than it was expected to do. Nothing incredible about that. And then when crisis hits, you mismanage it and everything collapses. Also nothing impressive about that. What is impressive is an Obama record, or especially a Joe Biden record that saw an even better and more effective recovery that picked up the pieces from what was left in Trump's presidency. And I was going to say it, but because you're the one who I've heard make this point before and originally, explain the skyscraper analogy for everybody.
Yeah, so I think it's a perfectly apt metaphor. So you think about it. Barack Obama comes into office January 2009, and he inherits a crater, a giant hole in the pavement. And from that, he oversees. I'm not going to give him all the credit for it, because presidents, right, although they're powerful and influential, they don't single-handedly build or destroy economies, Republican or Democrats. But on his watch and under his supervision, a skyscraper emerges from this crater. The skyscraper is incomplete by the end of his second term. So it's out of the crater. It's, you know, 100 stories in progress. He tosses the keys over to Donald Trump. Donald Trump, you know, oversees the additional 2 or 3 or 4 stories, and at a slightly slower pace, I might add. But he adds more on top of it, and it is taller as a result, because it's 98% Obama, 2% Trump. And then on Trump's watch, the whole thing collapses. And he leaves the next guy. He tosses the keys to a guy who now inherits a crater filled with rubble. To me, the metaphor is this, and what Fox and Trump want you to believe is, well, he was the one who actually built the sky. He built the tallest skyscraper. Yep. It doesn't matter what was built prior to him. It doesn't matter that the vast majority of the work was done prior, and all he had to do was just keep it going. He added additional stories, so they say, and it collapsed. But we actually were kind of fuzzy on the time, but it doesn't matter that it collapsed, because at one point it was taller than what it had been before. And so to me, that's I use this metaphor because it's like, what you really want is to cut off the good stuff that happened before Trump and cut off the bad stuff that happened because of Trump or on Trump's watch, and focus exclusively on the mess that Joe Biden walked into, just completely out of context. You see a mess and a pile of rubble, in walks Joe Biden, and you're hoping that people can, mess with Joe Biden, that the mess is Joe Biden's responsibility. And I just think, unfortunately, it's very effective for a large segment of the country. But that's why we have to contextualize it, because the facts don't speak for themselves. And I think too often people just assume that President Biden would be given credit for the pandemic era recovery. And I don't want to harp on this too much, Luke, but like people forget the amount of effort that had to go. Yeah, we had the vaccines, but they had to go into arms. And Donald Trump's plan was to simply give the vaccine to states and let them mess with it. And that's why the vaccination rates were very low under Donald Trump compared to what they were under President Biden. When President Biden stepped into office and said, no, we're going to give it to the states, but there will be a federal coordination of this. The federal government will hold your hand as we do this. We'll do this together. It'll be a partnership. You know, vaccination rates nearly doubled. You know, President Biden wanted to get 100 million vaccinations in 100 days. We got 200 million. In 100 days. He put a vaccination and testing site within like 5 miles of 95% of the American people. Like, just, and that's what allowed the economy to open back up. That's what allowed us to continue with the pandemic era recovery. And by the way, I'll also just say this, even if you factor in all of that, Luke, even if you say, I don't want to give Biden credit for that because it was just cleaning up Trump's mess and it shouldn't count. I don't know why we would ever accept that, but fine, let's just do it for sake of arguments. The average monthly job creation under President Biden is better than it ever was under Donald Trump. So even if you control for the pandemic for both of these men, Biden's record is just better.
Yep.
Sorry, I'll step off my soapbox. Even,
exactly. Unemployment lower now than it was before the pandemic. Like you said, job growth remained stronger after we recovered all the pre-pandemic jobs, and they just completely, wage growth is currently stronger and outpacing inflation than it was before the pandemic. And there's more to be said, but before we do that, let me play this clip of Dr. Birx. You saw her in that shot in visible pain as Trump was talking, and here she is on CNN reflecting down the road on what could have been done if there were a better response during that crucial time.
when you look at your data now and you think, okay, had we mitigated earlier, had we actually paused earlier and actually done it, how much of an impact do you think that would have made?
Well, I look at it this way. The first time we have an excuse, there were about 100,000 deaths that came from that original surge. All of the rest of them, in my mind, could have been mitigated or decreased substantially.
Yeah, so it's horrific. And I have been talking about Josiah with the audience, this piece from The Atlantic that is psychologists who sort of assess the post-COVID grief and the way that people are trying to omit COVID from their memory and omit that period of time because it was so painful. And you understand that, right? Emotionally, understand why people would want to just like forget that that happened altogether. But that then has political implications because when you do that, it causes the situation that you're talking about. And we can't do that because the job of a president is to handle the crises that break out on their watch. A good example is you don't blame Biden that Putin decided to invade Ukraine, but you should judge him for how he's responding. And I think the correct thing to do is supporting Ukraine, which he's doing. And then I will say, and then I'll throw it to you, Josiah, the timeline warp thing that gets done, this is what was sitting with me, is far and beyond just on the economy or on COVID. Because we hear this strange thing. You talked about it with the summer of 2020, where people will show photos from that summer of a building on fire or something and will say, this is Joe Biden's America, even though Trump was president. But then, really importantly, you talked about the vaccine rollout. The fact that when Biden got into office, he wasn't spitballing up at the podium about injecting bleach, and his focus was on taking the advice of public health officials and rolling out this vaccine rollout in part with the American Rescue Plan, is what allowed us to get back to normal, which is what Trump talked a lot about. We have to get back. We got to reopen the economy. Biden actually was willing to do the hard work, and his administration and Democrats and sometimes some bipartisan Republicans, but not with the American Rescue Plan. And the hard work had to be done to address both the public health nightmare, but also the crime situation and also the supply chain problems. And if you dive into the nitty gritty of that playing out, it was a lot. And the hard work had to be done to then allow us to get back to normal. Trump just wanted to talk about getting back to normal. Biden actually did the work to get it done. And interestingly, I've talked to Trump supporters who, like what you talked about with other examples, will act like Biden shut the country down and Trump opened it up. What are you talking about? And one in particular just kept repeating, no, Biden shut the country down. Biden shut the country down. But that doesn't even make sense. If you look at the timeline when we started opening things, it was obviously when we were getting the pandemic under control. Do you remember who was president?
They don't. Crazy. They don't. It is frustrating, and that's why I just, and I'm not saying it's going to work. It's entirely possible. I'm a cynic by nature. It's entirely possible that this effort will not succeed. But I am convinced. I've seen no evidence to the contrary, and we've tried it the other way for decades, and we haven't seemed to make much by way of progress, which is that, again, I go back to, we must speak aggressively, loudly, and consistently on behalf of facts. Never assume. To me, when I hear people or I read, you know, either Democratic strategists or political operatives, because we used to, you know, the facts will speak for themselves. They lose credibility with me. No, never. Facts never speak for themselves, ever. And this idea that the facts, you know, Ben Shapiro, famously right-wing commentator, said, facts don't care about your feelings, gang. Well, feelings actually are what determine electoral outcomes because people will vote based on their feelings, which is what you encounter at these MAGA rallies. So that's the other thing. I think sometimes we Democrats have actually internalized the Ben Shapiro logic, which, the facts are on our side for the most part in most situations. We don't have to worry. No, what that creates is a really good foundation, hopefully, to change people's feelings, to shape people's feelings. But feelings at the end of the day are what hand power over to elected officials. And so facts don't speak for themselves. We have to speak loudly and consistently and aggressively on their behalf. And I think we have to reject the framing too. I think it is absurd to accept the framing. That's why when people say you have to go easy on Trump for the pandemic, I say no. I'm not obligated to do that. None of you, nobody here watching is obligated to do that. Because number one, they would never do it if the shoe was on the other foot, ever. And we are not obligated to play by double standards. And two, to Luke's point, when you are the president of the United States, Democrat or Republican, Donald Trump or Joe Biden, you have a duty to try to manage crises. And we can and should grade on how you respond to them. So for me, I've always said, if Donald Trump, as much as I despise his policies, as much as I despise his rhetoric, if he had done the best of his ability to manage COVID and still failed, I would be nowhere near as harsh on him. Because at the end of the day, he's still a man. I can say, if you did your best with what you had at your disposal, that's something. Donald Trump did not do that, right? So you look at the Afghanistan withdrawal for President Biden. That was not a perfect withdrawal by any stretch of the imagination. But I can look back and say that for the most part, the Biden administration did the best with what they inherited from the Trump administration, timed it and reset when Joe Biden stepped into office. So he inherited a context, he had a policy outcome, and he did his best with what he had. Was it perfect? No. Can we fault him for it? Sure. But the reason that I grade him much more gently in that than Trump is because he did the best he had. And at least on paper, the decisions he made were sound. There is nothing sound about Donald Trump standing in front of the press and saying, hey, maybe we should look into, you know, bleach injections.
Exactly right. And we have the proof of what you're talking about in after the fact, especially these experts saying we didn't get anywhere close to the proper response. And if we had, we could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives, which is what you saw in that clip there. The people who were around Trump are willing to say that was not what we should have been doing. Josiah, where can people find you?
You can find me at youtube.com/@ponderingpolitics, one word. Luke, I appreciate the collaboration, man.